year looking at a series called Bible Basics, Where Life Meets God. Where Life Meets God. And in this case, it's going to be Moses. Something about God that his life is going to meet. And it's not going to be pleasant, and we're going to be looking at that. But yet, it's something that we can learn from, something that we can benefit from. And I believe if Moses were here today, he would be mighty happy for us to look at this, for us to look at this. Just want to say that it's good to be back. It's very good to be home, not just to be home in my home, but to be home with you. Missed you last week. I was 6 days in a work in Lufkin, Texas, and I don't know if you know anything about East Texas, but it's East Texas, and the brethren there, very friendly, very receptive. I gave 8 lessons, but we were busy nonstop during the day. We would visit homes. We would visit those who were prospects. We would visit those who were somewhat bereaved or they were suffering because of different things in their life, but also we would meet those who had fallen away from the Lord and trying to do all that we could to encourage them. And I was encouraged by their work, the brethren that are in Lufkin, and we were visited by many of the neighboring congregations. Got to see a lot of preachers, several that I know, and always encouraged by that. But mostly this, we just spent time in fellowship with God and His Word. And that was just wonderful that I could be there. I appreciate your prayers, appreciate your encouragement. The fact that you were with me, because you're part of who I am, and you're part of the ability that I have to communicate others the Word of God. And it's good. When I trained as a preacher with an older preacher, and I called him older at the time. He was in his 40s, okay? Now I think that's a younger preacher. But anyway, he said gospel meetings will pump you up. And they do. They do. It's good to kind of have a change of venue and to see really what it's all about and where the power of God is and gives you perspective. But I am very pleased to be home, very pleased to be home. Numbers chapter 20, this is where Moses and the Israelites, and I'll unreel it like this. 40 years of shepherding Moses did with the Israelites, a people who provoked God. And when you see in Numbers chapter 20, you see where it's sort of the height of all the problem. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. They had come in the wilderness of Zin, Numbers chapter 20, verse 1. Then the children of Israel, the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month. And the people stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? Is it not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink?" So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals." So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod. And water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." This was the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel contended with the Lord, and he was hallowed among them. So 40 years of shepherding these Israelites, 40 years. If you've read through the story of Moses, what you see that the story of Moses goes throughout the Old Testament, it goes throughout the New Testament. In fact, when you hear about Moses, everybody just sort of perks up. And we're talking Moses here. We're talking the Moses who led the Israelites out of Egypt toward the Promised Land. This is Moses of whom Jesus spoke of. This is Moses of whom Peter and Paul spoke of. In fact, Moses was held in high regard as far as the Israelites in the days of the Apostle Paul. Moses was like sort of a painter. You know, these artists like Rembrandt or somebody like that, and you know what they say is they say, well, you know, Rembrandt, he probably carved out just a meager living while he was on earth, but as soon as he was dead, man, the price of his art went sky high, okay? And so when Moses was living, and you see the regard that these people have for Moses when he's right there in front of their face, these people are just complainers. They're murmurers. These people are contentious. And these people don't regard Moses like it was 1,500 years later when Jesus walked on the earth and Paul walked on the earth. It's easier to speak well of a man when he's not there, okay? And so this is Moses, but life for Moses was not easy. In fact, Moses didn't sign up for this job. He didn't fill out some kind of application and say, I want to lead the Israelites. He knew exactly what the Israelites were like. He's experiencing this, and they did not exceed his expectations. They stayed just like they were the whole time of which he led them. Very difficult people. Here you have millions of people of which you are leading and shepherding. Moses, in his previous life, had three different components, if you will, in his life. The first component of his life was he was raised in Egypt. The second component of his life, each of which of these components took 40 years. 40 years in Egypt, 40 years in Midian as he was a shepherd of flocks. Now, 40 years as he is a shepherd of God's people, and life is not easy for Moses. It was pretty easy that first 40, but it was very difficult, very difficult. The hardest part was shepherding people, okay? Animals are easier. And these people were a challenge. They were a serious challenge. When I say it became the apex, this is the straw that broke the camel's back. This is Moses saying, enough is enough. Enough is enough. So I expressed it that Moses got his fill of the complaining rebels. And he goes to the Lord. The Lord instructs him what he should do. And Moses makes this statement when he says, must we bring water for you out of this rock? Must we bring water for you out of this rock? The critical thing, I believe, of which God points out was his error was that he failed to sanctify God in the eyes of Israel. The New King James Version of which I read was that you did not hallow me. He says, to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel. That's what you should have done. That means to make people revere who I am, to show me to be holy. Hallow, an extension of the word holy. That's what you should have done. But when Moses said, speaking of he and his brother Aaron, must we, and I like the vernacular of the King James Version where he uses the word fetch. Must we fetch? This New King James Version says, must we bring water for you? Must we bring? I just like the word fetch. In other words, we're the ones fetching the water for you, and here you are complaining, and we're tired of it. We're just tired of being your water boys. We don't want to be your water boys. Well, when he made that statement, he was not including God. Actually, who was producing the water? Who was delivering the water? It wasn't Moses. It wasn't Aaron. It was God. It was God. And God had been patient, and he had served the Israelites. He had preserved the Israelites up until this point. If it was time to slam the Israelites and to write them off, whose business is that? It's not Moses' business. It's God's business. It's God's business. But when we do something impetuous, for instance, I was talking to a couple that had been married a long time, and they admitted that they had a couple of holes punched in the wall and a couple of doors, because sometimes people don't just slam doors, they punch holes in them, okay? They lose their temper, right? And so you see this and you're like, what happened there? Well, the moment got the best of me. This is one of those times of which we would say the moment got the best of Moses, wouldn't you say? The moment got the best of Moses. And so God punished Moses. God said, you shall not bring this assembly into the land. You shall not bring the assembly into the land. In Deuteronomy chapter 34, that's the last chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, this is where Moses then spends the rest of his days on earth bringing the Israelites to the promised land, on the brink of the promised land. And so he's going through the rest of his life knowing that he himself will not enter. The first four verses of Deuteronomy chapter 34, then Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo on the top of Pisgah, which is across from Jericho, and the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead as far as Dan. I like Google Earth. Google Earth is fun because I've gone to the promised land on Google Earth, okay? And so I have been in Moab on Google Earth, and you can do tilt on Google Earth and look to the Mediterranean. You can see across the promised land. It's pretty exciting. That's where God took him. He says you can look in. Verse 2, all Naphtali and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, all the land of Judah as far as the western sea, the south and the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees as far as Zoar. Verse 4, then the Lord said to him, this is the land of which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there. God is saying, I told you, you will not enter. You can see it. You will not cross over. The rest of that chapter is where Moses then died, and God buried him, and nobody can find the body of Moses. But Moses did not enter into the promised land. That's an error by Moses. God punished Moses. Moses suffered earthly consequences for his sin. Moses suffered earthly consequences for his sin. And we need to, as we look at where life meets God, to see that Moses suffered earthly consequences. Slide 2. Sins have earthly consequences. You don't have to look these up. Let's take these kind of quickly, if you will. The lazy person may starve. The warning in Proverbs 6 is, go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. In other words, here's the ant that has no supervisor and the ant that lays up food because winter's coming, and if you don't get busy and be industrious, winter's going to come and you're going to starve, okay? 1 Thessalonians 3:10, if a man doesn't work, neither should he eat. What he's saying is this, if you're lazy, you shouldn't be eating. You don't deserve to eat. You're lazy. The defiant citizen will be punished or imprisoned. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 20, don't speak a word against the king because a bird might hear what you've said and the message might get back to the king and the king will be very displeased and you will be punished. You will be in the disfavor of the king. You've sinned. The old law said that you would not speak against the ruler of the land. Do not speak against the ruler of the land. In fact, it was considered blasphemy just to speak against God's king, much less God. He's saying, you be careful because you're going to eat your words. You will eat your words. You'll be punished. Or Romans chapter 13, as God has created government so that they might be his minister against those who are evildoers. And then it says that the government bears not the sword in vain. Have you ever heard of people in prison and maybe have a death sentence and you hear that they've obeyed the gospel before they were executed? So they have made peace with God through the blood of Jesus Christ, but the execution still goes through. Still goes through. That's earthly consequences for sin. We can understand that. That's what Romans chapter 13 is warning people about. You need to obey your government because your government has, by God, the right to punish evildoers. Being selfish or inconsiderate strains relationships. I would at this point invite you to read all of the book of Proverbs, all 31 chapters, because it is filled with the product of earthly decisions. Earthly decisions bring product. In other words, they can bring blessings or they can bring hardships. And this one with remove yourself from your neighbor's house, lest he grow weary of thee. When he's saying that, he says this, don't strain relationships. Don't annoy people. And you say, I can annoy whoever I want. Siblings sometimes annoy each other because they know they're stuck together for a long time. They're like, well, I'll just annoy him. Who could do anything about it? He says, withdraw thy foot from thy neighbor's house, lest he grow weary of thee. In other words, you've strained relationships and all of a sudden your neighbor doesn't invite you over anymore. Your neighbor avoids you. These are earthly consequences because I've been selfish or inconsiderate, imposing on others, annoying others. That's kind of light, but it's included in the list. Foolish conduct destroys one's reputation. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. And so here you've got a politician. He shoots himself in the foot, and he thinks, I should still be an official, an official. You see that all the time. They will rerun for office, and someone says, we remember who you are. We remember what you did. Either they did something that was very bizarre morally, or they, you know, stole from the government, or something like that. And but this is just foolish conduct. If I think I can be reckless and it's not going to hurt, it is going to hurt. On this earth, it's going to hurt. Remember that trust is earned. It's never commanded. Someone says, well, I made a mistake, but now you got to trust. You don't have to trust them. Trust is earned. It's always earned. It's never commanded. And foolish conduct destroys trust. You've heard the expression that it takes a lifetime to build a reputation, but only a moment to destroy it. And then what have you got? What have you got? It's because sins have earthly consequences. So we get to something that's more serious and very heavy. Abusing one's body with sexual immorality, alcohol, drugs, or gluttony impairs health, perhaps even causes death. Here's four verses I want you to look at. The first of which is 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 18 through 20. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 18 through 20. And here he's telling us to flee fornication. And he tells us this is the reason why, because it's against your own body. Flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body. But he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit? He says, who is in you? Whom you have from God, and you are not your own. For you are bought at a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. But did you notice he said that the person who commits fornication, sexual immorality, sins against his own body? In other words, this is the body you have to live with the rest of your life. Romans chapter 1 and verse 27, he's talking about homosexuality. You call it gays or lesbians maybe in this decade, but this is the way of which he expressed it. Verse 27, likewise also the men leaving the natural use of the women, of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men, committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty for their error which was due. And again, the King James Version, which says the just recompense. Their just recompense. In other words, they're going to have to live with what they've done and live with the same body which has committed the sin and been involved in this sin. Oftentimes when sexual immorality takes place, people are only concerned about somehow or another preventing an unwanted pregnancy or having what they call safe sex. What he's saying is this. He says, you're doing things to yourself of which become a part of who you are. And you then have to live with it. You have to walk with it. Oftentimes people, they contract communicable diseases. They cause emotional trauma to others or to themselves. And he says, this is a consequence. It's heavy. It's very heavy. It goes with you. And then even death. Many people with the homosexual community have died of AIDS and other kinds of communicable diseases. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18, he says, be not filled with wine where is excess. King James Version again. That is, you've got debauchery. You've got a place of which you're never satisfied. You just want more and more and more, and so you imbibe more and more and more. He says, but be filled with the Spirit. That's what we should be filled with, because when we again, induce these things into our body. And I say alcohol, drugs. I'll put marijuana in that one. We've got a lot of that going on in this community. I knew a brother that he had so much alcohol in his body that his body disintegrated from the inside out. I knew a lady that did that also. They call it alcohol poisoning. To see someone die in that state is traumatizing, very traumatizing. And someone says, well, you know, it's my body. I can do with it what I want. But back to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, he says, your body is not your own. It's the temple of God. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 16, he says, do you want some honey? Eat such as is sufficient or you'll vomit it. In other words, even a good thing. The reason why I bring that in is because gluttony is involving food. And food itself is not bad. Sexual immorality is always bad. Alcohol, so that we might be inebriated, it's always bad. Drugs, the same reason. But actually, food can be a right thing that is used in a wrong way. And I believe that's what he's warning about in Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 16. It's so possible that we eat ourselves sick, that we can possibly eat ourselves sick or have a chronic behavior with food that is to our detriment, and sins have earthly consequences. That's the point. Sins have earthly consequences. Adultery, then, itself is sort of its own category, because Satan gets so much mileage out of adultery. In the case of David, 2 Samuel chapter 11, David saw his neighbor's wife, Bathsheba. He committed adultery with her. Then he had her husband killed. It was a domino effect. And then his whole home was destroyed. God told him, he says, you took your neighbor's wife, your neighbors are going to take your wife. Your neighbors are going to take your wife. Homes are destroyed. These are marriages that are broken up. This is traumatizing. This is violent. It's violent. And someone says, how to be happily divorced. Let me tell you, divorce involves violence, because it separates that which God says is bone of bones and flesh of flesh. And again, it was a domino effect. David's home was destroyed. He lost children because of his adultery. His children went into evil. Likewise, his son Amnon got into sexual immorality. His son Absalom tried to overthrow his kingdom. All these things that are happening while David was letting himself be lost in sexual immorality. It's very damaging. And so David actually moved on with his life to see both of these sons killed. Both of these sons killed, Amnon and Absalom. And no one wants to do that. Those are consequences, serious consequences that happen on earth during the lifetime of David. Well, let's look at this. Grace can save us, but it does not always stop earthly consequences. And I believe grace is everything. I do believe grace is everything. So we look at Moses. Moses did not enter the promised land, but he went to God. Matthew chapter 17, it says that Jesus met with three apostles at the Mount, what's called the Mount of Transfiguration. And there with Jesus were two other persons, Moses and Elijah. So I believe that the theme here is prophets. Prophets. The theme here is prophets. So with Jesus is Moses and Elijah. Moses, who was the chief literary prophet of the Old Testament, and Elijah, who was the chief non-literary prophet of the Old Testament. And the conclusion was, as Peter said, oh, wow, let's build three tabernacles, one for Jesus, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And we would think it was a monumental time, a time to build monuments. And God says, no. Jesus says, no, it's not a time to build monuments. God, in his voice, says, this is my beloved son. He's speaking of Jesus. He says, hear him. Hear him. So of the three who were the mouth of God, the word prophet means mouth, the mouth of God, the three who were key in these people's lives, most famously Moses, then there was Elijah, and now here's Jesus, okay? Who is the mouth of God that God says is the preeminent one? Jesus. Hear him. Hear him. But I want you to see that Moses went to God. He didn't go to the promised land, but he went to God. And I believe we can infer that. David found forgiveness in Psalm 32. And in this psalm, David is, he is emptying himself before God. And makes the statement then in Psalm 32, verse 1, blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. Now notice this, that David is saying, I'm justified before God. Thank God. This grace is beautiful. It has lightened who I am. But here's the same David who gave this psalm, again, whose house was in disarray. The Lord had told him, the sword will not depart from your house. The sword did not depart from David's house. As long as he was on earth, he was in conflict and turmoil. But yet he said, as far as my account with God is concerned, he says, I'm forgiven. And if your account with God is forgiven by God, and he does not impute to you your sins, your past sins, he does not hold them against you anymore. That's everything. That is everything. But God did not take away those earthly consequences. Earthly consequences may vary. They may vary. They may or may not be reversed. I have known politicians that got back into politics and they earned the trust of the people. I've known of preachers that have done foolish things and they were reinstated. And I've known of husbands who committed adultery. Their wives took them back. And I've known wives who have committed adultery. Their husbands took them back. But yet, it's not guaranteed. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter